students have. I mean, this is not disconnected from the amplifying of the needs that that these students do have that are sitting in front of us at this point.
Now, in terms of that problem of class sizes, can you put that into perspective for us about how many students per class and about how much time is each of these students getting with their teacher?
It's almost impossible to quantify that in a way that would sound satisfactory. There's very, very limited one-on-one time that teachers would be able to spend with students. We have classes that are in the 35 range. I know prior to the end of September, which we're not there yet, there are classes, even kindergarten classes, that are up in the 30s. And these are children that are 4 and 5 years old. Almost impossible to deliver a high quality program when classes are that big. So the individual attention, the understanding of the needs that students have, you know, the challenges that students are walking into our classrooms with in any given morning, sometimes they can get buried and lost in the cacophony of the large numbers that are in front of our members. So I think it's very hard for people that haven't been part of public education in the last 15 years to recognize how much things have changed, how great the needs that students have now are, and how the system needs to pivot in order to provide properly for all of those students. It's a very different system than when many of us were at there as students. And I think that's important for listeners to recognize.
You mentioned violence in classrooms. This is something Rabble's reported on. It's a growing issue across the country. Doug Ford hinted earlier this year that he'd like to see more police officers in schools. And I was wondering what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, again, a typical conservative move. Let's use more cops, more guns, more defense spending. These are reactionary at best. And even as a reactionary response, they wouldn't address the issue at all. And certainly in the elementary system, what we need is supports. And much like out in the community, we don't need more cops on streets. We need more programs for people that are struggling. We need more assistance for individuals. Those things might cost a little bit more money, but they're sustainable. They will have long-term impacts. They'll impact across different areas that are more sustainable. So, I mean, I know that there are some people that think that's the solution. From our perspective, it absolutely is not the solution. And we look at those as, they're not even band-aids. They're ways to distract from where the true problem lies. The true problem lies in the fact that these kids need supports. Schools are the best place to provide those supports. This government is not investing in those supports. And so then they see a mess and they turn to a reactionary response, which is let's put more cops in schools. It's atrocious. It's an atrocious response to a real problem.
Absolutely. And just getting to the end of our time, I just have one more question for you. For our listeners who've been hearing about these issues with the trustees, the takeover of school boards, and they may be parents, and they want to get involved in being part of the solution, what advice could you give them on how best to do that?
Yeah, there's a lot of community groups that are forming right now. I know in Toronto area, there's a variety of groups that are forming. Certainly you can go online and you can look up groups that are looking to fight back against either Bill 33 or the elimination of trustees. You'll find a lot of groups. Certainly sending messages to your local MPPs, specifically if you've got a conservative MPP, that would be important. Having conversations with people that you know, with your family, around the kitchen table, at church, in the arenas. Talk to people about the importance of trustees, the importance of local governance, the importance of a tailored local approach to public schools. Conversations about how Cornwall is not like Toronto. Conversations about this Doug Ford government. Do you trust this government to make good decisions on behalf of these kids that are struggling in our schools? ETFO's got a website called Building Better Schools. We would ask you to go to that website, look at how we talk about what we think are ways that we can build better schools. ETFO and all the other teacher affiliates and all the education sector affiliates will be going to the bargaining table at the end of next year. Reach out to them, see what you can do, how can we work together to ensure that public education is funded properly. Definitely lots of ways to do that, but I think at the heart of this, it's about conversations we have with people that we care about.
And on that note, thank you very much, David Maston, for this interview.
Appreciate it, Nick. Thanks so much.
was David Mastin and Nick Seabrook in conversation. Thank you so much for that, David and Nick. Switching gears now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. To do that, let's turn things back over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with labor news. Post-secondary institutions across the country are under financial strain due to chronic underfunding and also because of the cap on enrollment for international students. This strain has led to massive job cuts, with Ontario seeing over 10,000 jobs cut from post-secondary institutions over the past year alone. Unions are fighting to protect the rights of their workers, with post-secondary support workers represented by the Ontario Public Sector Employees Union currently on strike across the province. Union President J.P. Hornick lays some of the blame at the feet of the province's conservative government. Hornick said, quote, "As this fight heats up, there are going to be a lot of questions Ontario taxpayers needed answered, especially as jobs disappear and options for students shrink before our eyes," end quote. In Ontario politics, activists are calling on the Ontario NDP to reject Doug Ford's plan to invest in nuclear and fossil fuel energy over renewables. The Ontario NDP under Moritz Stiles have indicated their support for Ford's plan to diversify the province's energy economy. Critics, however, say that nuclear power is inefficient and dangerous when compared to renewable solar and wind energy. In an op-ed on Rabble, Angela Bischoff of the Ontario Clean Air Alliance points out that nuclear plants often need to be taken offline for maintenance and that they create toxic nuclear waste which remains dangerous for thousands of years. Bischoff is calling on the Ontario NDP to pass a resolution at their convention on the weekend of September 20th rejecting nuclear energy in favor of wind and solar. Also this week, in Rabble's Book Lounge, Tom Sanborn reviews This Book is a Knife, Radical Working Class Strategies in the Age of Climate Change by L.E. Fox. An anthology of Fox's essays, the book has a strong anti-capitalist, pro-environment message. Fox self-describes as a proudly queer, non-binary, working-class writer and activist. They have published widely as a science writer and social critic. According to Sanborn, Fox is a writer who seems to be able to deftly use many modes and genres without ever losing the fluent and idiomatic style that gives reading them the delights of a good night at the pub with a smart friend. In environmental news, writer Linda McQuaig argues that Mark Carney should focus on renewable energy as a nation-building project. Carney has made funding of projects of national economic interest a priority for his government, and has already expressed his intention to fund Ontario Premier Doug Ford's previously mentioned plans to build more nuclear plants. McQuaig argues that because solar energy has become so cheap and is so hard to hoard as a resource, capitalists are refusing to invest in it and are instead continuing to fund fossil fuel projects that worsen the climate crisis. On top of funding large solar projects, McQuaig is also calling for a National Youth Climate Corps, saying, quote, "Now there's a transformational nation-building idea. It would tackle youth unemployment and alienation and give us all a greater chance to live in a world not dominated by wildfires, floods, and droughts," end quote. And finally, David Suzuki talks about how art can ignite action in his latest column on Rabble. The David Suzuki Foundation funded the National Rewilding Arts Prize in partnership with Rewilding Magazine. The prize celebrates artists in Canada whose work reimagines our relationship with nature and community. The inaugural prize, launched in 2022, drew more than 550 applicants. The winner's work spans textiles, sculpture, installation, photography, and sound. It is on view at the Canadian Museum of Nature in Ottawa until October of 2025. As always, you can read all of the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. Thank you to the journalists and the writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week. Thank you.